The following business conversation is brought to you by Trudon, the publisher of the Yellow Pages and proud supporter of small business in South Africa.
Hello.
Hi, Dave from A1 Builders in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It's Dan. I found your number on the internet and I need you to build me a room, the purpose of which I cannot disclose.
What?
Fine. It's a sunroom. Can you start immediately?
It's 4 a.m.
I'm sure it's 4 a.m. somewhere, Dave, but here in SA, it's 10.
You mean USA?
There's more than one Pretoria out there. For the quickest and most efficient way to find what you're looking for, start your search with yellowpages.co.za or download the app. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.
I'm Adrian Groenewald. This is a leadership platform on Cliff Central, and this is the Small Medium Business Leadership Show. We start off with 5 minutes of inspiration. Last week we had Brian Maudsley from Cape Town, and this week we have Catherine Constantinidis. In a moment, she'll share some inspiration with small business owners out there who are just struggling and following their dream. Just a quick reminder of an event at the Midrand Conference Center, 11th of April, on opportunities in Africa and how entrepreneurs can seize them. There will be serial entrepreneurs speaking, individuals that have been entrepreneurs for many years, failed, succeeded, and all you have to do is follow hashtag AfricaRise, one word, hashtag AfricaRise for more detail. Last week, enterprise development funding and the kind of support that that brings. Go listen to the podcast if you're interested. I found it very interesting. We spoke about with someone from FNB who seems to be pioneering this sort of service. Today, employment law and small medium business. Employment law and small medium business. A half hour is just not enough for this, but we're going to cover as much as we can and certainly tell you where you can learn more. So before we listen to Andrew Butters and, as usual, Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, Andrew Butters is employee relations and HR consultant, speaker and trainer, and he has spoken and consulted across the African continent, Middle East and Europe. So he's our guest, and of course Richard and Louis in the studio. But first, Catherine Constantinidis. She's very involved with LeadSA. She's been a small business owner for many years, former Miss Earth and many other things. Catherine, welcome to Leadership Platform.
Thank you so much. An honor to chat to you today and give you my little, bit of inspiration and thought. And basically, something that keeps on, I keep seeing a specific saying, and it's a saying by a gentleman, Milton Berle. And he says, if opportunity doesn't knock, build a door. But sort of my thinking for today and what I'd like to leave the listeners with is that as entrepreneurs, we really do have to understand exactly what it is that we want to achieve. What is the ultimate goal and purpose? I so often think that, as entrepreneurs, there are so many things on our plate all of the time, and there's so many different ideas and things we're wanting to try, but we really need to find what that one thing is, and we have to go after it. Because I think that sometimes we forget that it's the last key amongst that really big bunch of keys that we're holding that actually opens the door. So don't give up too easily. Understand exactly what it is that you're trying to achieve and go all out and do everything possible to make that a reality.
So if opportunity does not knock, build your own door. That's kind of what entrepreneurs do, isn't it?
Absolutely. However, sometimes we don't realize that we might be holding a really big bunch of keys, and it's that last key that opens the door. So first exhaust all opportunities, and then if that doesn't work and that door doesn't open, just make sure you build your own.
Is that what gives you energy, Catherine, as an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's really about the fact that we don't realize that, sometimes it's so much easier to give in. It's so much easier to just try something else. But if you believe enough in what it is that you're doing and what you're trying to achieve, you really can make a difference. And you really can ensure that those opportunities are made for you by creating that door yourself. Sometimes we think that we're going to find the right door that opens, or, people say if one door closes, another opens. It doesn't always. But it's about how much determination we have on our journey and our path to make sure that we build that door ourselves.
Catherine Constantinidis, thank you for infusing us with energy and passion.
And always a pleasure.
We look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. All right, in the studio, Andrew Butters and Richard Angus. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Gosh, gentlemen, let's get going. labor relations, or what are we looking at today? Employment law, all those issues. A lot of small businesses, I am sure, have no clue because they don't necessarily think they're going to have many employees. Suddenly they have two, three, four, five. And before they know it, they actually have to comply to a lot of these things. We look at basic conditions. We look at employment equity. We look at Labor Relations Act and handling discipline, which in South Africa, we know you can't fire someone that easily, which is good and bad. So let's go through that. Richard, you've prepared well. Mm-hmm. Basic conditions, leave, sick detail, all that stuff. Let's go for it. Let's see what we can cover.
Andrew, I think maybe as a starting point, maybe if I can put to Andrew the question, as you know, as a small business owner myself and many others, I think that the thing you always think about is, well, what's going to hit me next, or what are the issues I'm going to experience? But my insight would tell me that, you know, while you may feel, as an individual that, you know, you've been singled out with the wrath of employment relation issues, the reality is, I'm sure, Andrew, you see a common theme that comes through in the SME space time and time again. What are some of the, or what is the thing that's always top of the conversation when people pick up that phone and say to you, I need help? What are the things that are biting the SME out there?
Richard, I think probably the most common issue I would encounter would be, how do I discipline a particular employee? I have a problem with this particular employee. He's done something wrong. What are my rights? What are my responsibilities? I think that's probably at the outset where most of the telephone calls would start. Another common issue would be around specifically looking at the issue of poor performance. How do I manage the poor performance of a particular employee? What do I do? What do I need to do? What is the ground rules that I need to have set with that particular employee? And then you get a whole raft of questions around specifically the administration of contracts of employment and what I have to do to make job roles clear and so on. So I think those typically would be the most common kinds of issues.
Okay. So maybe, I mean, if we can start with that common one of you know, the whole question of discipline in your employee base. And, you know, where would we go there? So let's pick on that subject of discipline. That's by and large regulated by the Labor Relations Act in terms of how you and what your relationship is between you as an employer and your employee. What are the things there that we should be wary of? I mean, I know there's obviously a dispute process if there's something that somebody disagrees with. Perhaps let's start though at the principle of, there needs to obviously be a contract of employment that's there, be it verbal or written. When does it need to be verbal, or when can it be verbal? When should it be written? And then from there, just talk us through some of the things that we should be thinking about when it comes to a dispute with one of our employees.
Right. So I think essentially just in terms of the contract, I think the Basic Conditions of Employment Act recognizes specifically that there needs to be a contract of employment and it needs to confirm certain particulars. Unfortunately, we don't have the time necessarily to go into all of that right now, but if one were to do a web search on www.labor.gov.za, one would be able to source it from Section 29 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Further, I think the issue around and moving into the issue of discipline is there needs to be certain rules and regulations that the employee is informed about, because one of the tests for misconduct is specifically the test of, is there a rule? Does it exist? Obviously, later on, one would test the misconduct against, was there a breach? Was the employee aware of that particular rule? Those rules are specifically spelt out either in an employee manual, the contract of employment, or even a disciplinary procedure. Obviously, there's also a requirement for a disciplinary code that then clearly informs employees if there is a transgression of a particular rule, what the expected or the guideline is on a sanction or a disciplinary measure.
So what I'm hearing there is, just like in finance or any other professional space, you almost have to set down the rules so everybody knows what rules we're playing by, and potentially say, and what are the cause and effect relationships and the consequences thereof. So I'm going to employ you. You're going to work so many hours a day or a week for me. I'm going to pay you. These are the activities that I expect you to perform. Should you breach or not reach those performance milestones, or you choose to do certain things, if you, for example, let's use the classic ones of you commit fraud or you steal from me, if that occurs, it's a dismissible offense, and you will be and there will be a summary dismissal should we produce the evidence of this event in your in your relationship. So for me, it sounds like you need to make sure that you've got that framework right, and I guess with every framework like that goes consistency. So you can't say, well, I'm going to fire somebody for, you know, taking an item of stock out of the stockroom and taking it home with them to sell to somebody else. But hey, it's okay if you take home, a ream of, paper to use, you know, at your kid's school. You know, you can't have that inconsistency. So it's important that from an employee relations perspective, I guess that there's that consistency, is that if there's a theft, if there's a, you know, if you don't follow through with a client, if you don't do something that you're asked to do, that the same sanction applies consistently. And I guess that, is that an area where people get themselves into a bit of hot water or not?
Absolutely. I think it's probably one of the when one deals with an issue of misconduct, I think an important concept to understand is that discipline is intended to be corrective. Whether an employee that is undergoing a disciplinary hearing or not sees it that way, I guess, is a different issue. But it is intended to be corrective. Part of the process is the correction should be progressive. In other words, it goes from a low step or a low level of discipline. In a severe case, obviously, it goes to a much higher level of discipline. In your instance, a theft or a fraud, obviously, warrants a dismissal. In terms of the consistency issue, where you're dealing with misconduct, there are five typical things that come into it, of which consistency is one. One is there a rule? Two, is the employee aware of that rule? Was there a breach? Four is, has that rule been consistently applied? And that is where we do see many, many problems creeping in, where today one realizes that there is room for mitigation and for circumstances that have an impact on the ultimate disciplinary measure and that can make it slightly softer. However, in applying your mitigation, you should not be broad as to be inconsistent, because it would jeopardize a case if it was taken on dispute at some point.
Let me just jump in there. So I know I must work from 8 to 4 or 4:30, that I come late once, twice, three times. The boss knows about it. He does nothing about it. And then one day, a few weeks later, he decides, now I'm going to discipline you, which is maybe just a verbal warning. And then I can turn around and say, hold on, you seem to have been quite comfortable with the fact that I was late the last month. Is that what you're saying, as a stupid example?
Absolutely, and it's not so stupid, Adrian. It happens very regularly. And I think a good message to small business owners out there is, if you do have a situation like that, all is not doom and gloom, then tidy up the rule by sending out a notice to employees to say, look, in the past, I might very well have been a little lenient on this. I intend cleaning it up so that you don't get into a lack of consistency in how you deal with your disciplinary issues.
Okay.
So, I mean, we talked a lot here about discipline and how you handle that. Let's go back for a moment to, you know, so we said up front, let's establish the framework and the kind of the rule book by which we're going to play. Now, that to me plays to the Basic Conditions of Employment space. There's the Basic Conditions of Employment Act that's out there, and that dictates a whole lot of things that we need to have. What people's leave is, what their sick leave is, what their overtime is, any allowances, and how that all kind of strings together, what you're going to do in termination scenarios. So how, you know, if somebody absconds, how that's going to be handled. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act defines a lot of that. I think, you know, I've recently had instance to realize that sometimes there are things out there that you don't realize. We had a scenario where somebody was employed for less than 6 months, and they seemed to think that they were entitled to sick leave, you know, on a 3-year cycle. And I didn't realize that the act was very specific. It says in the first 6 months of your employment, you're only entitled to, help me here, to
1 day for every 26 days worked.
So, you know, this person was taking sick leave, and, you know, nobody was really getting too agitated about this. Things then progressed and it got out of hand. And then we realized a little further down the track, we said, oh, hold on a second here. How many days is this person entitled to? Can, you know, somebody go back and do the recon? And then all of a sudden it was like, hold on a second. They're not entitled to X number of days in terms of the rolling 3 year cycle. I think it's, what, 30 days every, in the 3 year
cycle. In the 36-month cycle.
In the 36-month cycle. Mm. It's actually one day for every 26 days worked. And suddenly, you know, so you've got to know your stuff. In terms of some of those basic conditions of
and
employment,
and that's tough. I'm a small business owner. I have 5 employees, and I have to know it as a big corporate would, where they have their own department, legal department, with a subdivision that deals with labor relations. So it's tough for small business owners. You know, we've got to make it easier for them.
Well, I think, you know, for me, that was one of the things that I realized. I'm going, okay, so it would pay to get advice from people about basic conditions of employment, making sure your contracts are in place properly, making sure that all of these elements are well known within your organization. It came as a bit of a newsflash to me, I must admit. So I kind of went, well, if that was a newsflash to me, I wonder who else it would have been a newsflash to discover that little gem of information. And I mean, that's there to protect the business. You know, we often talk about, and I mean, we've spoke with Herman and some people about the, in previous shows, about the legislative framework and who's, you know, impacted and what's good and what's bad. Reality, that's there to protect the business owner in that first 6 months of employment. They don't have this onerous obligation of a, you know, rolling 36 months and all of this from day one. They actually have let's call it a phasing in, under the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. It's there to protect the business owner. Yet many of us don't know about it or realize it. So these are things that people need to get a fay with.
I think you hint on something which is crucially important, is that we have two problems typically within small business. The one issue is essentially that the small business owner may not know what they don't know. And if they do know what they don't know in terms of the employment law, the other issue is that they do not have the budget necessarily to be able to deal with those issues. Another point, Richard, that you make, which is typically one of the areas that perhaps I neglected to allude to, is what happens to an employee who just disappears from work, you know, in terms of notice and all of those sorts of issues. There are some ways that you can deal with that, and there are some protocols that are set as guidelines to you in terms of, as a small business owner I'm speaking of, as to how you need to deal with those. But the knowledge is really something, and I think it's like, I would say the same in finance and accounting and so on. If you're a small business owner, I think it is vitally important that there's some stuff that you can pick up as valuable resources off the internet. But I think it is important, and it is valuable, to be able to make use of a partner to your business who understands the human resources and employee relations environment well, and that can give you proper good advice in terms of what to do in your business.
Yeah. Like you have an accountant or someone like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I was going to say to you, so, you know, in the spirit of SMB leadership, I mean, the reality is, as a leader, we've talked about this often, you're a specialist in your business. You're not meant to be a financial expert, an HR expert, etc. So go out and get the right type of resources and intellectual property from people that are out there and are willing to impart of that knowledge. Obviously, there might be a cost involved with it. That's fine. My advice would be, particularly in the world of employee relations, not getting the right advice can be a very, very, very costly mistake.
Time-consuming, energy-draining.
Well, time-consuming, energy-draining, and have a huge financial impact. You know, the CCMA, as the body that almost regulates these relationships in many cases, is actually quite, you know, people are often, I think, scared of the CCMA because it comes with all sorts of connotations. But the reality is, they're there to protect all parties. But often, you know, the outcomes from a CCMA sort of a hearing or procedure is actually fairly onerous. I mean, if you've dismissed somebody unfairly, and you get told, okay, well, you now need to reinstate that person or compensate them for let's call it loss of tenure or whatever, you could find yourself with a 1-year salary bill, and they're not even in your business anymore. So, you know, yes, salary bill, and you've got to employ somebody else to do the job that they were in because you didn't follow a process properly. So, yeah, you know, think of the numbers involved there. That can be quite a serious obligation. Now, the one thing that also strikes me, and I mean, we talk about the changing landscape of business. The thing that's hit the South African business owner in the last little while has been the whole question of employment equity. And that's a moving landscape. We've got the new codes that have recently come out on employment equity. Talk to us a moment, Andrew, here about an employment equity environment in terms of there's this employment equity plan that you need to have. There's some reporting that needs to happen, targets, things like an e-forum, things like when you're interviewing for people, employment equity now becomes part of that conversation. Talk to us a little bit about some of those issues.
In relation to employment equity, and there have been some changes recently in relation to the Employment Equity Act, along with the amendments to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, as well as the Labor Relations Act. But essentially, if one looks at specifically the Employment Equity Act, the responsibility of business, and they talk about a designated group, which is effectively anybody who pre 27 April 1994 was a citizen of South Africa and is black. It also refers specifically to a designated employer, and the designated employer, I'll get that out eventually, is an employer that employs 50 or more employees essentially.
Okay.
Firstly, the designated employer must provide a employment equity report. One of the changes is it used to be provided every second year. In terms of the changes and the amendments, it must be provided every year now. The other thing that a designated employer must do is it must specifically provide an employment equity plan. And section 20 deals with the issues of what goes into section 19. Deals with the issues of what goes into that employment equity plan. So typically, you've got to do an analysis of your workforce. You've got to make an analysis of the demographics of your workforce, because you've got to, in your plan, specifically report on issues of the areas in which you are underrepresented within your business. You must set out the objectives of your employment equity plan, and so forth and so on. There are many different things. You have to set out your numerical targets and your goals and the timeline of your employment equity plan. So from an employment equity perspective, I think the issue here is that your analysis needs to inform both your employment equity report, which you submit annually as a designated employer, and also your employment equity plan, which is typically a plan over 3 years or 5 years, as the case may be.
So you're a really small business, though? You're a really small business, 2, 3, 5, 10 employees exempt?
Yes, yes. Obviously, they would not be classified as a designated employer.
Just to clarify, designated kicks in at what level?
50 or more, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So anything less, don't worry too much about that stuff. Except if you're a small business and you now engage with government.
Yes.
So now government looks at what? You know, how does government, any municipality, you have a government contract, they do dig quite deeply into your employment equity status, whether you're small or not.
Okay, so there's actually a rider to your question. Is obviously you need to also be guided by the turnover thresholds, and typically those turnover thresholds are dictated to by industry. Again, one of the changes is, which might be some respite for small business, is those turnover thresholds have increased threefold in the recent amendments. So if you're in a personal services type of business, you were at 5 million prior to the amendments, you're now at 15 million. So if you're a business under 50 employees, that has an annual turnover of in excess of 15 million, then you still do need to comply. You become a designated.
But if you're under 15 million, then you're exempt.
That's correct.
Unless you deal with the mining industry. The mining industry have their own charter, don't they? And they will force you to be. They'll force you to be different than what legislation in general says. Not to get detailed, but you know what I mean.
Indeed. And I think the issue there is that there are lots of nuances between broad-based black economic empowerment, the codes, and employment equity and so on. So I think it is one of the challenges, Adrian. You're completely right.
Three minutes left. What do we focus on?
Well, I don't know. One of the things I was going to say is, you know, we haven't talked a lot here about performance management, and I think that's a very broad subject. It's actually something that we're going to need to have another show on, because we've agreed that performance management and how that hangs together is an entire subject. You could take 30 minutes talking about that on its own. But I think that the key thing for me is to say to business owners out there, don't be scared of expecting what should be expected from your employees in terms of delivery. I think people are often, they kind of go, oh, you know, can I actually expect this of my people? Should I, you know, should I be soft on this issue? Whatever. My advice would be, you know, people are out there to do their jobs. Most people get up in the morning and want to make a success of their life. Give them the honest feedback. Be transparent. Make sure you cover all your bases in terms of the things we've spoken about today. Make sure you've got all your, boxes ticked. But then after that, it's okay to expect something from your employee base, and they too have obligations that they feel to you to actually deliver on those contracts of employment.
Okay, Andrew Butters, two things quickly. In general, it's all fair, isn't it? All these laws are fair towards the employer and the employee, and in essence, an employer who feels it's unfair is probably because of lack of knowledge, lack of understanding of how to deal with it. That's the last statement I want to make. But then where do people go for more information? We've touched the surface of this conversation. Where can they get hold of you, or where can they just go in general? You did give a website. Let's give that quickly to end off with.
My website is www.prettymuchpeople.co.za, my own, or otherwise
prettymuchpeople.co.za.
That's correct.
Okay.
And also, if they were to go and they're just looking for a piece of legislation, the easiest to do is to go into www.labor.gov.za, and all the legislation is listed there, and they just need to know what they're looking for.
Okay, Andrew Butters, Richard Angus, thank you again,
thank you, as usual.
Thank you. For leading the conversation, which was brought to you by Trudon. Visit trudonhome.co.za for all your small business marketing needs. Trudon, it's our business to grow your business.
Ivan Cleanus, Worcester. Conrad speaking.
Hi, Conrad. This is Chad from the Glen Gables Hotel in Worcester. We're looking for a new cleaning service. I found your number on the internet. Would you be interested?
Yeah, Flip, great. Where are your offices?
Well, on the corner of Alaho and Aldo, across from the Beef Cack and Tag Shack.
There's more than one Worcester out there. Reach a more relevant audience by advertising with the Yellow Pages. Visit yellowpages.co.za and get listed online with South Africa's most trusted business directory. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.